Hi, Mormon Matters listeners. This is Dan Witherspoon with just a quick thing ahead of our podcast. I think many of you know that I'm a fan of the Rational Faith's blog and podcast, and I just wanted to have a couple of minutes here at the beginning of the program here to give a little more exposure to a neat project that they're doing. So I've got Brian Dillman, who's one of the permabloggers and who's spearheading something over at Rational Faith, and we're just going to have a quick chat about a project, and then we'll begin the podcast proper. Hello, Brian. Welcome. Tell us what's going on over there at Rational Face.
At Rational Face, we have joined up with the Liahona Children's Foundation. And the Liahona Children's Foundation is a humanitarian aid group that feeds starving children, basically, helps them with education needs and things like that. And they have a couple different ways that you can contribute to their cause. And one of those ways is to adopt a stake. And what they have determined is that $6,000 will go pretty far and will cover a stake as far as feeding malnourished children and helping them get education. And so they have a long list of about 150 stakes around the world, usually in developing countries. And you can select one and adopt it and raise the $6,000 and give it to the Liahona Children's Foundation. So that's what Rational Faith is doing. So we've adopted a stake. It's actually not a stake. It's an area called Dak Mau in Cambodia, and we're working on raising that money. So we just want to raise awareness, and we're hoping that during this holiday season, as we go through Thanksgiving and approach Christmas, folks will have the opportunity to give a different type of gift to my family. In the past has made quilts and then given them to different organizations that were in need. And this year, you could join with us and donate to this, to the Liahona Children's Foundation. And we have a page up. If you go to the Rational Faith website and scroll down just a little bit, there's a bunch of banners on the right. And the top banner right now is the Liahona Children's Foundation banner. You click on that and it'll take you to a post that we've put up that describes how the donation process works. It has a picture of the, if you use PayPal to donate, it tells you right where to click and where to write in the Dak Mau area so that it can be counted as part of the Rational Faith's effort. And then at the bottom of the page, I'll update it whenever the donations go up and I hear word from the Liahona Children's Foundation. I'll update it and let everyone know how we're doing. So that's what we're doing, and we're hoping the Mormon Matters listeners will find a place in their heart and a place in their wallet to nice. to help these kids.
Thank you so much, my friend. Congratulations. That is such good work. My family and I are generally, donate to Heifer every Christmas season, Heifer International, and we'll start the conversation with my own family about maybe doing it here.
There's a lot of great organizations, and sometimes it just takes picking one and contributing to it. So this is the one that we picked.
Way to go, Rational Faiths. And Mormon Matters listeners, I trust your good hearts. And if this is where you feel called to donate, I'm sure that you will. So bless us all. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Mormon Matters podcast. This is your host, Dan Witherspoon, and I'm really excited about tonight's conversation. It is going to be different than many of them in that it's a subject that you wouldn't necessarily say off the bat, oh, this is Mormon-related, this is gospel-related, because it's more just a thing about human beings, and especially a certain segment of human beings. We're going to find out tonight it's really quite common, and all of our guests are going to share a little bit about why it was important for them to finally get a sense that this is their personality type, or this is one of their temperamental qualities or something like that. We are going to talk about introversion as opposed to extroverts. We know that many people in the world are introverts, and we're going to talk a little bit certainly just about it in general. We'll frame it. We'll debunk myths about it. We'll talk about its strengths and sort of the areas in which it maybe differs from a lot of other people's experience, because we're going to kind of talk about how there is an extrovert ideal in this world. Seems like extroverts kind of tend to, I don't know, have leadership callings, or they tend to have bigger personalities and sometimes more influence. And so we'll talk about that, because there's lots and lots of strengths of introversion as well. And so after just kind of a general framing of it, we're going to talk about introversion and its intersection with Mormonism. We'll tell lots of stories about everybody's experience in the Mormon world and how their introversion, they think, either shaped it positively or negatively. And then finally, we're going to kind of do a segment at the end, and maybe a lot of these things will come up in the middle of the thing as we tell stories, but we're going to kind of talk about what are some things that Mormonism could do differently. What are some things that all of us could do differently, just to notice introverts in our lives, in our circle of friends? Are there particular callings that might be better for introverts? Are there particular things that we think about spirituality or whatnot that need to be reframed when we think of introverted personalities and the things that they can do and the ways that they can serve? I'm thrilled to have today with me four wonderful guests. We were going to have five, but Christine Haglund was going to join us and just had to cancel the very, very last minute because of something coming up. So she's no longer with us, but you may hear some references in the podcast to things that Christine had shared with us in a long pre-conversation that those of us here on the panel have had. So we're going to have four guests out of the five that we had planned, and we even had a sixth one contribute online as well. So it's been a real neat team effort, but I'll just go ahead and introduce first, or have him introduce first himself. This will be John Hatch. John is the only one who's been on the podcast before, so John, if you don't mind giving us a quick reminder of who you are and what you do.
I'm John Hatch. I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah. I actually work in Mormon studies. I work for Signature Books, and I am new to discovering that I'm an introvert. I've sometimes been called antisocial. I've sort of identified with that, even being a little bit curmudgeonly or something like that. But reading a little bit about introversion, that's really where, you know, even just in the last year or two, that's really where I've been able to say, wow, that's me. That's who I am.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'm going to introduce next, or have Laura Stewart introduce herself next. Laura was the reason for us having this podcast. She just kind of wrote me maybe a month ago, and then two of our other guests, the one I'll have introduced next, also wrote me a week or so later with something that related to introversion, and I just said, man, guess what? I've already said we're going to have a show. So Laura, you're the reason for us to discuss this today. Would you quickly tell everybody about yourself?
Yeah, my name's Laura Stewart. I'm just an average member of the church. I have two kids. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I have degrees in English and in special education. And I recently, too, I guess it's been in the last few years that I've started identifying as an introvert. I don't think I really understood the label before that, but I'm just happy to be here. And I'm a huge Mormon Matters fan, so it's a big honor.
We're thrilled to have you. Thanks so much, Laura, and again, thanks for starting this. And John Shaw, you were one of the ones who kind of just said something to me, and I said, hey, guess what? We want to do a show on this. Will you be on it? Would you tell everybody about yourself?
Well, sure. I grew up in the Davis County area. I spent about 20 years over in Kansas City in the Liberty, Missouri area. Just recently returned to Davis County. I identify myself in introversion. It kind of snuck up on me. I didn't realize it. I thought kids, having kids and young kids especially, kind of masked that for me quite a while in the church. And it's only until, it was only once they got a little older that I started to notice some of these things. And I also hope to contribute by some experience I've had over the last 20 or so years being a clerk or an executive secretary and multiple stakes and wards. And so from a kind of a church leadership perspective, I
awesome.
Hope to contribute a little bit.
Thank you so much. We're excited to have you. And just to let everybody know, we had a lot of pre-conversation for this one, tons of emails. I think it was 16 pages when I printed them all out of the various emails and things we shared. And John, you did have tons of stuff there, so we're excited to have you on. Now, Greg Nelson, I'm going to have you introduce yourself in a second. Just to let everybody know, it's Greg's mom, Kimberly Nelson, who was the other one along with John, that John Shaw, that said something to me that said, hey, we're going to do a show on this. And Kimberly contributed a lot to our pre-conversation, but she said, you know, you really ought to have my son Greg on instead of me. So, Greg, with your mom's recommendation, and it's been fun to, she was even actually sending us things that you had written about your own experiences. Welcome to the show. Would you tell us about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Dan. Well, I definitely don't have any official qualifications for this other than being an introvert. So other than that, I'm a psychology major at Utah State here in Logan and minoring in philosophy. And lately I've been studying a lot of Eastern philosophies where there's actually quite a bit of a different dynamic as far as the like ideals of being an introvert versus an extrovert. It's pretty different in Eastern philosophies than we experience here in the West with Western psychology and Christianity. So I hope to contribute some things there as well as just my own personal experience.
Excited for all of that. I did notice the stuff that you'd written and your mom had sent along. So on that Eastern stuff. Laura, I'm just going to throw to you kind of first. You were the one who, I know you'd read some books, you gave us all links to do, and I'll pass those along to our listeners for some interesting things on introversion. So would you help us just define introversion, debunk some of the things that it is and that it isn't? And I want everybody just to chime in as she hits on something, or you'll have a chance at the end if you think she missed something just on the general nature of introversion, so we kind of know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I'd love to. And please chime in if you guys have anything else to add. I know I'm not an expert. So Carl Jung wrote a book in 1921 that was called Psychological Types. And that's probably the most popular first attempt that I'm aware of, at least, of someone trying to differentiate between introversion and extroversion. And incidentally, the Myers-Briggs personality test, which is really popular, is really based in Carl Jung's thinking. So he was one of the first people to talk about it. When I've tried to describe my introversion simply to my friends or something, I've usually said that I have to recharge away from people and extroverts need to recharge with people. But, you know, personality is complex and people may label themselves introverts for different reasons. So I actually think it might be more helpful if we go over a checklist associated with introversion so people can get maybe a more well-rounded idea of what it actually is. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I thought was interesting, and so this is for the segment of the listenership who don't know if they're introverts or not, it's not that minority a thing to be an introvert, is it? Isn't it a third to a half of people seem to fall somewhere in that?
Sounded a little high to me. I read one study that said 50% of people were introverts, but I've read from 20% to 50%. So a lot of people.
Yeah. So even if you're not one yourself, listeners, I bet there are introverts in your very close circle of friends. And so just being alerted to this is going to be pretty neat. But yeah, please go over some of the characteristics.
Sure. So this checklist is from the book Quiet. Well, the whole title is Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking by Susan Cain. But I'll just go through them. The first one is, I prefer one-on-one conversations to group activities. I often prefer to express myself in writing. I enjoy solitude. I seem to care less than my peers about wealth, fame, and status. I dislike small talk, but I enjoy talking in depth about topics that matter to me. People tell me that I'm a good listener. I'm not a big risk taker. I enjoy work that allows me to dive in with few interruptions. I like to celebrate birthdays on a small scale with only one or two friends or family members. People describe me as soft-spoken or mellow. I prefer not to show or discuss my work with others until it's finished. I dislike conflict. I do my best work on my own. I tend to think before I speak. I feel drained after being out and about, even if I've enjoyed myself. I often let calls go through to voicemail. If I had to choose, I'd prefer a weekend with absolutely nothing to do to one with too many things scheduled. I don't enjoy multitasking. I can concentrate easily. In classroom situations, I prefer lectures to seminars. So if you relate to a lot of the things on this list, you probably are in the introvert spectrum. But I think it's important to understand that just like intelligence, personality is kind of like a rubber band. It can only be stretched so far. So I've changed somewhat in my life, but I'm never going to be an extrovert. So to me, a lot of these qualities are just kind of a part of who I am. Does that make sense to everybody?
You know, it's interesting that you list this stuff off, because this is how I really got into this. And it's almost, you know, it's almost embarrassing to admit. It's not like I read any scholarly thing. Like a year or two ago, a friend posted something on Facebook, and it was a listicle from Huffington Post, and it was like 23 signs you're secretly an introvert or something like that. And I mean, it sounds like this silly thing. And I started going through this and I just went, whoa, this is, I mean, it was really eye-opening. It was, you know, it, again, it's a little embarrassing, but it was a powerful experience for me to think, whoa, what is, you know, this is really who I am. And a couple of the ones that stuck out to me were, you know, downtime doesn't feel unproductive to you. That was really important to me. You know, knowing and understanding that, you know, leisure time is valuable. And another one that I really enjoyed, because it, again, it felt so familiar, was you'd rather give a talk in front of 500 people than having to mingle with any of those people afterwards.
That's your favorite, yeah.
I was like, wow. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the list is actually really important, because it at least it's what jumped out to me going through this and just feeling like this, I mean, you know, this silly thing that somebody just posted is really speaking to me.
Awesome.
I like the way, this is John Shaw, I like the way that Christine put it in the pre discussion when she said it felt like somebody put a camera in her brain.
Yeah, now that was actually on a different list. We're going to talk a little bit at the end. It's about high sensitivity people, right? Yeah. Is that right, Laura?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a separate list. So we'll talk about that in a second. But you're right, just this idea of, wow, identify for that. And even if you say, because obviously I identified with a lot of those things too, but I, you know, after immersing myself with you guys for the last few weeks and kind of getting this, I don't think that I would really be an introvert. Especially, I don't think before I speak. Ha ha ha. Why I host a podcast here. but you know, I tend to not identify, but it was certainly lots of those things on the list were good things for me to think about, and I certainly match those up. So it's not an all or nothing thing. Now, one thing that you said, Laura, is you kind of called it the introversion spectrum. We want to make sure that one of the debunking things is introversion is not a disorder, right? Does anybody have any like experience of thinking there's something wrong with me before kind of discovering that this is just a temperament?
I'll jump in. This is John Hatch again. I did. I mean, I really have. Like, it's hard to explain, but yeah, when you're expected to be a certain way. And when, you know, and my wife, for example, is very extroverted. She's very outgoing. She's very good with people. And, you know, she wants to go out and go to parties and go do these different things. And I'm sure we'll get into some of those things as well. But, you know, when you don't want to do that, and when it feels difficult, it feels really challenging, and it feels overwhelming, not all the time necessarily, but sometimes to do those things, it really feels overwhelming. You wonder, is there something wrong with me? And so I've, you know, when you mention the word disorder, I've wondered in the past, do I have social anxiety disorder? You know, you see commercials for that, and I can take a pill or something. You know, and again, being labeled antisocial, I've been told that before, and just wondering, you know, and wanting to be different, you know, for a long time, even though I kind of liked myself, I liked, you know, the fact that I wanted to be alone with my thoughts or read or whatever, but also feeling this part of me that wanted to be different, that wanted to be able to, and I would even ramp up and say, hey, I'm going to be more outgoing and I'm going to go to this party and be really, you know, the life of the party. And of course it never worked because it's just not me. So yeah, I've definitely felt that before.
Yeah. And same here, this is Greg. Just like he was saying, it for me, it was a matter of not really thinking it was a disorder, maybe, but more just kind of a general like personality deficiency, maybe, because I had these maybe social ideals of being a leader, being, you know, an example, being loving and kind and to everyone around you. And I would see these extroverted people that seemed to match those ideals so well. And so I would try and push myself to be that way. And I don't think that was really something that was healthy for me instead of just recognizing it as a legitimate way to live instead of something that I needed to try and bend and adjust myself.
Yeah. And this is John Shaw. I was just going to say, I grew up with this vague sense of unease everywhere, in every situation I was in. I never really could pin it down to one particular thing. I just always felt just uncomfortable in some way. And I could be having a great conversation in the middle of, you know, some people that I knew and in church activities and other things. And I just felt awkward and ill at ease and thought, you know, I'm just a weird person. And I don't understand why everybody else doesn't see this or doesn't feel the same way.
That is so interesting, you guys. I want to go a little bit more. John Hatch and I have been friends for years. And so, John, it was you talking about your experiences within Mormonism and, you know, me not being able to relate to them that kind of highlighted a lot of this for me. And so I'm the one that invited you to be on this show because you'd articulated a lot about your personality type and that, you know, being around people drains you rather than energizes you and things like that. And I'm just like scratching my head. And we both have a friend, Tom Kimball, who is completely opposite of you, you know, in terms of so it was just fun to have both of you in my circle of friends and have this great contrast. But I want any of you to talk a little bit more about that. Laura, it was the first thing that you kind of said, this energy. When does it flow out of you or does it come into you when you're with other people? I think that's just an important one. So John, say something first and then Laura and anybody else that just kind of wants to describe that because to me it's core.
Yeah. And again, it's another thing that I didn't even really appreciate. And then I saw it, you know, illuminated somewhere online that again, someone else, you know, had linked to. And it was this idea that introverts kind of guard their, you know, their this sort of this precious energy and we dole it out, you know, kind of carefully. We don't want to just spread it, you know, and it's hard to pinpoint because you certainly don't feel that way all the time. At least I don't, you know, it depends on the situation. But yeah, it's this sense that, you know, well, I'll give one example and this goes all the way back to my mission. And even now, you know, in my life, being married and having a family and everything, one thing that I have noticed about myself is I have to stay up after everyone else has gone to bed and just have some time alone. And so it's very rare for me to go to bed at the same time that my wife does. And that was on my mission, you know, you're supposed to do that. You're with your companion all the time. And I would just kind of quietly sit in my bed and stay up reading, you know, looking through the scriptures, reading, you know, a book from Deseret Book or something. And my, you know, my companions quickly learned that's just how it was. That I needed, you know, and I don't quite know how to explain it, but yeah, I would need that time to myself to just, it's like everything needs to quiet down and you just need to reflect and, you know, just be on your own. That's really the best way I can describe it for me.
I really relate. Was that John Shaw?
John Hatch.
Oh, John Hatch. Okay. I really relate to what he was saying about his mission because sometimes it was kind of taxing for me to have to be on all the time and never be able to decompress and unwind afterwards after being around people. And I actually, before my mission, I just thought it was a good quality. Like I was independent and I didn't need to be around people all the time. But on my mission, I think I realized, man, I really need time away from people. And I do that actually a lot with exercise, but I'd have to wake up really early with my companion if they wanted to go running with me on my mission. So it wasn't an outlet I had then. But I think it's important to just make sure people realize, like, I do feel drained after being around a big group of people, but I actually love socializing. Like, I love going to parties and interacting with people, or I do like going to church, but I also really do need that downtime afterwards to be alone and unwind and not be overstimulated, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, why don't we talk a little bit? Well, I'll tell you what. I want to do one thing first. Let's debunk quickly that introversion does not mean shyness. So who wants to speak to that? Because John Hatch, you're not shy.
No. And I mean, if any of my coworkers hear this, they're going to be like, what? This is, how did he scam his way onto this? You know, there's no way.
This prestigious radio show.
This guy, this guy that doesn't shut up at work is an introvert, whatever, you know. But yeah, it's absolutely true. I mean, it's not shyness. It can be. I mean, and Laura said it so well that, you know, personalities are complicated and, you know, you feel differently in different situations. And around different friends. I mean, I recently went to my high school reunion. That was obviously a very different experience than, say, going to work and being around people. And so, yeah, the shyness can be a factor, but it doesn't have to be. And I don't feel like it is in my case. But, you know, but yeah, it's still, you know, introversion is not necessarily connected to that.
Yeah. Now, John Shaw, in our pre-conversation writing stuff on email, you'd mentioned that you're fine with public speaking, for instance. You don't have any problems standing in front of a group. It seemed like you even competed, was it, in speech or whatever. And so that's another thing to dislike. It doesn't mean that, you know, you can't stand and be in front of people, right?
Sure. Yeah, I love giving a sacrament meeting talk. I love teaching gospel doctrines in front of everybody. You know, get me in front of 3 or 4, 5 or 6 year olds, that might scare me to death. You know, small group, but I'll teach large groups anything.
But again, like the list says, it doesn't mean you want to interact with them afterwards though, right?
No, not at all. I'm out of there.
Yeah, same here with that. I've always competed in like talent shows all through high school, and I've always enjoyed public speaking. And so I just kind of see the difference between shyness and introversion as being kind of, I think of a shy person as someone who wants to socialize, but has kind of like barriers or fears or an anxiety about it. Whereas in my experience, being an introvert is more just like, I can socialize. I don't have like an anxiety about it. It's just that I generally prefer to do my own thing or to talk to a group of close friends or have an in-depth conversation with someone I trust rather than a lot of small talk.
Yeah, I think shyness is kind of a fear of social disapproval or humiliation, and introversion is maybe a preference for environments that aren't overstimulating, but they can look the same. I was talking to my husband about this, and he's actually totally an extrovert. He's really funny in group settings and is great at public speaking on the fly. But he actually thinks that I'm less shy than him, like talking to people one-on-one or sharing intimate details about myself or maybe even confronting somebody when I feel like they've wronged me. So I think that people can be shy in different ways, and they may not generalize to all situations, if you know what I mean.
It particularly becomes exciting for me and interesting when I can sit down one-on-one or, you know, home teaching, in fact, you know, it's one of those things that's a great thing for me. I love that situation when it's one or two people, I've established a relationship with them and great, meaningful conversations that introverts like to have. But, you know, people I don't know, something I have just the social niceties, those things I don't do very well. And I think introverts don't like that really well. They like to have a nice deep conversation, but maybe not superfluous conversations.
Yeah. You mentioned, Laura, again, overstimulation. So let's kind of throw that one in. It's not necessarily the same list as introversion, but yet you read a theorist who has this idea of quite a few people just react to high stimulus environments in different ways. So tell us that list or frame that for us a little bit here in this first section.
So there's this overlapping label of high sensitive in the book that I read by Susan Cain. And she talked about a psychologist named Dr. Elaine Aaron. I think that's how she says her name. But this psychologist interviewed a bunch of people who either identified as introverts or said they reacted to overstimulating environments. And she labeled them high sensitive and came up with 27 characteristics based on her findings. And incidentally, she said that she found that 70% of the people were high sensitive in her study, and 30% ended up being extroverts. So maybe there's some extroverts listening that might relate to some of these characteristics. She said that these people were philosophical or spiritual in their orientation. They disliked small talk. They were creative and intuitive. They dreamed vividly. They loved music, nature, art, and physical beauty, had strong emotions. They'd process information about their environments unusually deeply, like they'd notice things that maybe other people would miss. They were highly empathic, had strong consciences. They'd avoid violent movies or TV shows. That's totally me, kind of funny.
And that's not just your Mormonism kicking in. Come on. Just teasing.
They're acutely aware of consequences of their own behavior. They may focus on too heavy of topics and social settings.
I love that.
They look before they leap. They arrange their lives to limit surprises. They're sensitive to sights, sounds, smells, pain, and coffee. And they have difficulty when being observed or judged for general worthiness. So I thought that was an interesting list because a lot of them overlap with introversion, but there's a lot of other characteristics there I relate to. Like I have like horrible dreams after I watch violent movies, or I'm really sensitive to taste and stuff. It's funny.
Now, John Cha, you were when we got this list in our pre-conversation, this is one where you said, this is like a camera inside your brain. Do you want to elaborate a little bit on that?
Oh, I just shared that same experience that Christine had shared, and that both of these high sensitivity and introversion identified with a lot of those things. I'm learning as much about myself right now and during this time of just preparing for the podcast as I have in almost my entire life.
Yeah,
it's been great.
Yeah. Awesome. Anybody else on the high sensitivity?
One thing that I think I've made an observation about just introverts is a lot of them are talented artistically and musically. So this high sensitivity list really made sense to me. But I just think these labels of introversion and high sensitive are two ways in which we can group people that may share a lot of these characteristics, society and in the church.
Yeah, I really like this, you know, and again, it's nothing hard and fast and nobody fits all the criteria, but it sounds like all of you were super relieved to get lists like this. And so I hope that that's an experience that a lot of our listeners are having here, as well as those who are married to or have children that fit these things. Just to kind of to spend some time with these things is really good. Now, I'm going to bring up one possibly negative thing about introversion. I want you guys all to react to it. Greg, I'm going to throw it to you first because it was your mom who kind of raised this in her pre-conversation with us. So your mom, Kimberly, said she's wondering if some of her perfectionism or her propensity to really worry about, you know, making everything right. She says she never really worried about her house and things like that, but it was almost her own personal striving and things like this. And she kind of threw out the question to wonder if introverts are maybe perhaps more prone to perfectionism than other people. Do you have any thoughts on that yourself, Greg? And then I want to throw that to everybody. So I'm not claiming that this is a connection, but it was certainly something that Kimberly worried about out loud.
Yeah, I would definitely see perfectionism as kind of maybe a tendency of introverts to have, because I see introverts as generally being very introspective, and which is a good thing, but the vice of that would be to be very self-conscious, and also to do a lot of comparison to others, especially comparing to extroverts. And so with that comparison and that self-consciousness comes kind of a constant worry about how am I being perceived? What should I do to improve how I'm being perceived? And just a general sort of worrying about not only how you're being perceived, but how you really are. And you're constantly introspecting and trying to become like some certain way instead of just flowing like naturally, where and introverts see extroverts as being like so free and liberating and not second guessing themselves. And so they try and do that in kind of a manufactured way, trying to force it, when in reality, that's not really in line with their nature.
Yeah. Starting to get hints of your Eastern philosophy in there, a little Taoism here, be yourself and all that. So we're definitely going to pick up on that later, especially when we kind of talk about, you know, the church and those kinds of things. But that was fun to get the echoes of that right there, what you said there, brother. Anybody else in the group here on perfectionism?
Yeah, I was just going to make an interesting observation that we were all relieved when we read these lists. And my husband actually was like, why do you want to label yourself as an introvert? You hate all labels. Like, why would you do that? And it's actually been kind of healing for me because it's kind of helped me identify my limits and focus more on the talents that I do have than try to be some person that I'm not. Because I do think introverts do have a lot of positive qualities. So I guess it was just the lists were gave me kind of permission to be like, you know what, you don't have to keep trying to be something else. You know what I mean?
John, anything on the perfectionist kind of connection with introversion? Do you think it's a strong one, or is that really not one that you'd want to kind of say is probably more in introverts?
I think this is John Hatch. I think it's definitely related. Again, it's one of those things that might overlap also again into the shyness and the social anxiety that is sometimes associated with introversion. Because again, that part of that comes from perhaps that fear of social interaction where you're worried about being judged. You're worried about what people are thinking about you. And so part of the perfectionism can come from that, but also part of it can come from, again, the intense focus of being introverted and just making sure that, you know, everything is going the way you want. It's also, I think, an attempt to control life a little bit. And I think that could, again, be an overlapping part of it that you at least again, for me, I really value things being a certain way and not being, you know, disrupted. Maybe that's not introversion and I just have a disorder, but that, you know, I think that's part of it that, you know, you want, you know, you really, so much, and I'll even get into this a little bit more later when we relate it to Mormonism, but most of our time is not our own, right? I mean, our time goes to our employer, our time goes to our children, our families, you know, church, whatever. And so that, you know, trying to structure things so that, you know, you can, you know, you're negotiating an extrovert's world. And so you're trying to, you know, build on that. And I think perfectionism, or at least putting pressure on yourself, can come from that.
Beautiful. Laura, what else is on the general list? We'll just kind of close up our introduction section here in terms of defining introversion and that kind of thing. Is there anything that we've left off so far?
You mentioned earlier that you wanted to dispel myths associated with introversion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe one of the best ways to do that is to talk about some of positive qualities that introverts have.
Sure.
So I just had a few things here. I read one thing about some evolutionary biologists, and I don't know a lot about evolutionary theory, but they found introverts in like 100 different species of animals. And one conclusion that they came to is that introversion is still being selected for in an evolutionary sense.
Huh.
Not because of our quirks, but because we can be really good, methodical decision makers. So I thought that was interesting.
Nice. Very interesting.
So introverts take less risk than extroverts, and it can pay off for us.
Yeah.
And be annoying to our spouses.
Didn't you say something in the pre-thing that you even had your genes analyzed and it seemed like one of them matched up?
Yeah. I took a spit test and had my genes analyzed, and they associate all these studies with your different genes. And one study was exactly this, that I wasn't a risk taker and I made good decisions.
So interesting. Yeah, fun little tidbit there. Cool. What else? I recognize just from the list alone, there are so many good qualities there, but what else would you want to emphasize?
Introverts receive more graduate degrees than extroverts, and national merit scholarship positions and all other sorts of school-related stuff. But the thing that I thought it was interesting about it, it's not because introverts are smarter than extroverts. It's because they have different problem-solving styles, which I think is interesting.
And that match graduate work more than perhaps extroverts? Or I guess I'm trying to get a sense for the advanced degrees.
They said that extroverts may be likely to kind of take a quick and dirty approach to solving problems, and
okay. They
make mistakes because they might speed through things. But introverts might be more likely to think before they act and digest the information more thoroughly. They may stay on task longer. They may give up less easily.
Yeah.
And they may work more accurately. So there some reason.
I can see that. But on the opposite, one of the things in your list was I'd prefer a lecture to a seminar. And that was the one thing that I found. As soon as you go to grad school, it's almost all seminars. Because, again, you're now not just getting information coming to you. You're having to work with information and prepare yourself to contribute to the field. So it's more of a seminar type thing. But I guess maybe the small groupness of a seminar, and you become pretty close friends with your fellow grad students or something, I can see that still being a comfortable place.
Yeah, I don't know. That makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, fun. Keep going.
There was one thing I read. Another thing was that introverts outperform extroverts on some social tasks that require persistence, which I think is interesting. There was actually a study done in a call center, and you'd think for sure that extroverts would outperform introverts in a call center. At least I would.
Right.
But unless the extroverts had a separate conscientious personality trait, they'd lose their focus and the introverts would outperform them. Persistence may not be a sexy or glorified quality, but I think it's one that a lot of introverts have. So when I was reading all of these things, it kind of sounded like the story of the tortoise and the hare, kind of the slow and steady sometimes does win the race. But those are just a few examples of positive qualities that introverts have that maybe some of your listeners haven't thought about before.
Well, I'm really excited, guys, to have a feel for this. And like I said, I've really enjoyed this last few weeks of pre-conversation and thinking a lot about myself. You know, my unwinding at the end of a party or something, John, isn't to recharge my batteries, but to like kick myself for all the darn stupid things I said, or, you know, to really ponder something here. So there's definitely some weirdness that always happens there. I do enjoy my alone time as well, but I think this idea of I need to recharge quietly, that was just important for me, so I'm thrilled. I want you guys now to go into Mormon experiences. So we're going to have, maybe we can just kind of go in an order or something like that, where everybody kind of reflects on something about the Mormon world that they've noticed. Maybe I'll start with John Shaw. You made some interesting comments. You might not have been the first one to mention this, but you kind of jumped off on it, that there is sort of a bias towards extroversion in the world, in the United States, and so in the church. And whether you want to go there exactly first or not, I'd like you to talk about leadership callings and who gets leadership callings, and just kind of take us into some of your church experiences with being an introvert in an extrovert's church.
Right. I think one of the interesting things that I noticed, or at least as I look back on my life growing up in the young men, young women program, there it is very social. In fact, if you look at the dating thing, right, boyfriend and girlfriend is not something that is encouraged. And I think that personally, as an introverted person, I would have rather had, singling off more than going on group dates, which kind of limited my interaction there as a young man, and at least doing the things I was supposed to do, with quotes around my fingers there.
Mm-hmm.
In that social setting, it moves into missionary work. We've kind of talked about that as well already. You know, as a missionary, I felt that interacting with people is everything that we did. I don't know if anybody else wants to. We kind of did the missionary work thing already. Anybody else have a comment on that one?
Anybody? Something that's specific to missions? A little bit later, I know Greg will have, or John will have some ideas on how we might reform things. So I know we had some comments on ways that missionary work could be reshaped a little bit. So we could hold off for that. But did anybody have anything before John moves off of missionary work?
I kind of felt on my mission that, I don't know, I felt kind of conditioned to think that acting like an extrovert and the way that I approached people was an act or measure of my faith, like a willingness to be bold and maybe a little pushy, or act like I knew what was best for everyone, was somehow linked to my level of spirituality. So I kind of became this, I felt like a different kind of salesperson version of myself. And I think not being yourself can kind of be exhausting over time. And I experienced some anxiety and a little bit of depression on my mission. And it was, I couldn't figure out why, because I liked my mission. Like, I liked being there and stuff. But I guess I just have this theory that some mental health issues on missions could be greatly improved if we allowed people to do missionary work that was maybe more in ways that were more authentic with their personalities. And I have some ideas about that later on, but that's my two cents about missions.
Super.
Yeah, this is John Shaw again. I had very similar experiences as a missionary when I was, when we, you know, you call it personal contacting, right? Or trying to approach somebody on the street or somebody you have no idea who they are. It was just terrifying to me. And I'd go out of my way even to walk around and find less people. And, you know, because it was just, it was mortifying to me. You know, getting in a door and sitting down in front of people was just fine. But getting to that point was really difficult for me to do, and I had varying types of companions that you know were good at it or were just like me. You know, we could walk around outside and not talk to anybody for like 3 hours.
That's funny. The spirit just isn't moving me to knock on any of these doors. Nice. Nice. Anybody else on missionary work, or else John, we'll have you go back to your any more things on your church experiences. Okay, go for it, John.
Yeah, I wanted to just from my perspective, I've sat in, you know, ward councils and bishopric meetings and stake presidency meetings over the last 20 years, almost continuously, in multiple stakes and multiple wards. And one very common aspect that happens is a ward council will inevitably debate on whether the ward is friendly or not. Mm. And you know, every ward goes through this phase where people move in and they talk to a bishop and say, hey, this ward isn't very friendly. And the bishop comes to the ward council and say, well, I don't get that. Well, I mean, I thought we were pretty friendly. I don't know what's wrong with that person. What are they doing wrong? You know, and inevitably the conversation turns to, well, what are they doing to integrate themselves into the ward? It becomes kind of a blame this family or blame that situation. Cause typically ward council is composed of, as we've kind of talked about this, extroverts and people who are social. We call and extend calls to people who we get along with, we socialize with that tend to, we want to put in front of people, you know, we want them to excite people and motivate them. And they sit around ward council and they're like, I have no idea. I'm doing just great. My family's great. You know, everything's great for us. I don't know what's wrong with all those other people. Yeah. And I just, you know, just hanging my head. You know, one time I remember we were talking about, it was a missionary work. We were trying to develop a mission plan. And the bishop said something like, well, let's get everybody to commit to having, you know, two families in their home each month. How hard is that? And everybody around the room was like, oh, yeah, that'd be pretty easy. And finally, I just spoke. I'm like, are you kidding me? That is terrifying to half of us. This is a terrifying prospect, just to invite people into our home, people we don't know. It's terrifying for some people. You don't understand. And of course, the discussion became, we don't understand why that would be so difficult.
Yeah.
So I think that's a, you know, when people move into a new ward or ward split, these things tend to really impact those who aren't extroverted more than the other ones. They are able to adapt to the changes within the sociality of the church a little easier, I think.
Yeah, nice. And if nothing else, what you've just said there has helped so many of us sit there and say, we've got to remember, we've got to look for it. Thank you for sharing this, that it is difficult for lots of people. And so all of us extroverts like me, we need to take a deep breath and just recognize that the world is not the same for everyone. And so that's been great. Did you want to have anything else in your experience with introversion in your own Mormonism? And otherwise we'll move on to the next person.
Well, just one other comment about callings and leadership. And I kind of mentioned a little bit, but we tend to see that and want that extroverted person to be out front leading, because they have all the strengths that we like to see. You know, religion is very extroverted, as we understand these days, and it doesn't always happen that way. Introverted people certainly can get into those callings and perform really well, but it can be a big piece of momentum in a stake culture. You know, where a stake president he starts calling bishops, and bishops start calling people in their ward, and it can roll and have years of lasting impact where extroverted people get seemingly associated with these leadership callings continually through, and can be hard to change in a church culture. Stakes and wards, it can be really hard to change that, and we really are excluding some really, really fantastic people from those opportunities because we don't perceive them as being someone who's a quality leader in the church.
Yeah, there's just such deep gifts that can come with introversion, and even that high sensitivity list. Also, there's so many wonderful qualities that would make for fantastic pastors and leaders of all sorts. So thank you for that. There's one more that you brought up. Can I bring it up to you?
Sure.
And this is kind of came, it sounded like, when you've reflected on yourself as a kid, you're saying, why am I interested in the deeper doctrines, or why am I so interested in studying the gospel? And John Hatch, knowing you, this might be a connection with you as well. But John Shaw, would you say a little bit about wondering if there's a connection between the way you expressed your testimony was through study and through really examining deeply versus maybe somebody else was through this social, I'm the guy that does this and I'm the one who leads this.
Yeah. I started thinking about this, particularly as we prepared for the podcast. And I started to think about those who are having a faith crisis and why it is that I personally, after seeing all these same things that people have having faith crisis express online, I wonder why it is that bothers them so much when it didn't bother me too much. And I got thinking that maybe my introversion and my deeper study into the background of the church and my interest in history and theology from multiple aspects led me to examine these things in a deeper way and allowed me to weather that storm in my own life, maybe in smaller doses. You know, when people who are extroverted or have a real social connection to the church start to see some of these things in their faith crisis, I wonder if they have an issue because in their sociality now, they can't talk about these things to other people because other people don't aren't real interested in it. And they start in this faith crisis, they lose that affinity, that connection to their extroverted friends and their social aspect in the church. And I wonder if that even affects them in a greater way, that we talk about the faith crisis kind of becoming a trust issue with the church. Yeah. And I wonder if some of that might even be affected by the fact that a lot of their testimony and interaction in the church is based on their socialization. Anyway,
I thought that was a wonderful point. John Hatch, can I throw to you to comment on that? And then if you don't hit on something, I'm going to come after you on a particular angle on that one. But go ahead and reflect on what John Shaw just said about this connection with perhaps why you study so deeply.
Yeah, I think that's definitely there that one of the things that at least I've read about with introversion is that introverts, you know, can be told they're too intense. You know, they get really invested in different things. Small talk is difficult for introverts. You know, we really like to dig deep. But it's really interesting hearing John talk about that because I had a similar experience in the church, but that went in a different direction because as I was studying and digging into this stuff and getting really interested in it, you know, and again, that kind of that intensity around it, I wanted to talk about it. And so I needed to talk about it. And yet, like John said, you're not this was maybe 10 years ago, and I think things have changed a little bit, but you weren't supposed to talk about it. And that was really, really hard for me that, you know, here I am studying these things and I want to talk you go to church and certainly understandably, but again, as sort of this extrovert culture, you know, you're not supposed to stand up and say like, I just read this crazy thing. Let's talk about that. And so that was actually a challenge for me because, and again, even though I'm introverted, it wasn't necessarily the shyness. I needed to vocalize this and talk about this with people. And, you know, and then that's where, you know, that was the point in my life where I turned to groups like Sunstone and where you do find that and you find a community where you can have those conversations.
Awesome. Anybody else want to talk about perhaps their own relationship between studying the gospel deeper, or trying to live at a deeper level because perhaps of their introversion? And then after that, we'll just kind of go to everybody's own personal list. But while we're on this topic, Greg, anything on your end about this connection with perhaps introversion and being more of a deep studier of the gospel?
Yeah, definitely. Something that I think is probably actually related to the idea of introverts disliking small talk is I kind of felt that way toward maybe the small talk of the gospel, like topics that I felt like, you know, we were just saying the same rote phrases over and over. And to me, just like in conversation, I want to get to some meaty stuff, you know? And so I would say, like, we're using all these phrases and all these mantras, but where do they come from? What do they really mean? And what do they lead to? And so I think basically for my own sanity, it was necessary for me to dig deeper and have a more cohesive image of the gospel in my own mind than maybe was available just from the average church discussions.
Awesome. Terrific, you guys, man. I'm loving this conversation. Now, John Hatch, how about I'm going to have you go next to any experiences you want to share, but I'm going to follow up on the one where I kind of said, if you don't hit it, I'm going to make you hit it, okay? And that is, we were talking about how, you know, you study it, you wanted to share it and things like this, and so you found Sunstone. You know, you and I have been friends for years, and we're kind of in a monthly group that gets together and things like that together. So I know you've had the outlets for this, but I want to ask about this, and it's a little bit personal here. You have chosen to leave the church, as well as Tom Kimball has chosen to leave the church. And as I mentioned before, we're all in this same group together. But it was a completely different experience to watch you choosing to not, you know, affiliate with Mormonism and Tom, because Tom immediately, as an extrovert, he went looking for other congregations. They shopped and shopped and shopped, and now Tom's, you know, on the board at the UU Church, you know, South Valley Unitarian Universalist Church. And there, he, as an extrovert, needed community and things like this, where you perhaps didn't. So I was wondering if you don't mind sharing the thing about that aspect, and maybe we can just raise this as a general question. Do you think it's easier for introverts to go into no church at all?
It certainly was for me. Yeah, I mean, it absolutely was. And it's hard to explain because, you know, I like the word I like to use when I talk about Mormonism is fondness. I remain so fond of Mormonism. I do it every day for my job. You know, I read Mormon history constantly. I live it and breathe it. And yet, you know, I would be lying if I said that I missed going to church. Like, and that's not to say that every introvert would feel that way, but I really don't miss it. I really just, you know, I crave that, you know, I just love the Sundays to myself. They're leisurely, they're quiet. And so I do think, I imagine it's a lot easier for someone like me who isn't craving that community. And I think there are other parts of that, certainly that too, like, you know, Tom, his last name is Kimball, and, you know, he grew up hearing about, Grandpa Heber C. Kimball, you know,
yep.
and those kind of things. And there's part of that familial, you know, community connection there. I didn't really have that. And so for me, that was easier. And it's ultimately just, you know, I've long, you know, a lot of people who leave the church, it's almost axiomatic that, you know, gall, they discovered something, and why, if everybody knew what they knew, everybody would leave. And I certainly don't buy that. I completely reject that. I've just come to really see the choice of one's activity level in Mormonism is much more about personality than it is about, you know, truth or, you know, whether,
yeah,
you know, prophecy or anything like that, or Joseph Smith. I really just don't think it comes down to that. I think it's much more about personality. And I'll talk a little bit just more about, you know, for me growing up, And I think one of the reasons I found kind of peace this way is one of the most challenging things for me is, and I alluded to this earlier, that, you know, our time is not our own. I guard my free time so jealously. I really crave and need that downtime. And it does feel almost overwhelming to have things sprung on me. And that is really, you know, Mormonism, I like to say Mormonism sometimes takes things from American culture and like in Spinal Tap, they dial it up to 11. And I think that's really the case with this. I think the broader American culture is absolutely extroverted. So I don't think Mormonism is unique in that, right. But I think they take it and they make it really extroverted. And it's a church where, you know, it's just so hyperactive. You're always doing something. They've taken the American Protestant work ethic and really it's on steroids. You know, you're at church 3 hours a week. You have callings, you have all this stuff going on and you're expected to always be doing. And growing up, I honestly felt like, I didn't want to be I couldn't do that very well. And I was made, you know, not deliberately, and certainly nobody's saying anything necessarily, but I almost felt like I was lazy or there was something wrong with me that I shouldn't want to feel this way, that I shouldn't just want to be sitting here reading or watching TV. I should want to be out doing stuff. And, you know, that was really, really hard for me. And I think that there is a little bit of an equation of leisure with laziness right. sometimes. And again, not necessarily deliberately. So that was really challenging for me.
And sometimes it can mean that, but yet, I hear you. That's great. Greg, can I go to you next for just some general like things that come on at church that you definitely think your introversion caused you to have a different experience than others?
Yeah, for me, the main thing that I want to point out is that for a long time, I would say that I hid behind my testimony because if God is this way and heaven is this way and this is the purpose of life and that's the ultimate truth, then I can use that as my confidence to essentially counteract my introversion. And so I was a really like go-getter as far as missionary work. I in high school I held early morning missionary prep classes, and I was all about it because I had God behind me, you know. And once I started, once some of that started breaking down and I started questioning if this really is the one true church and if every single person has to accept this to be with God, then suddenly that's when my introversion really became prominent, because I no longer had that kind of defense or cover to hide behind.
That is so interesting. Keep going. What else is on your list? That was fascinating.
Well, other than that, I think it's not just Mormonism, but Christianity and Western culture in general has kind of this image of success as being specifically extroverted, like we've hinted at. If you look at historical figures that people like when you're in elementary school and you're like picking a hero, it's generally a historical figure that is very extroverted and putting their voice out there and setting themselves up as a public image. And so we're kind of, I would say, indoctrinated with this ideal of becoming prominent, or that you're worth more as a human if you are in the public image or if you touch the most people's lives. And so naturally for me, I always thought I would be a general authority, you know, as I think a lot of people do, because they just have these great ideals. And so I was constantly shooting for that. And I had seminary teachers tell me that I was going to go far in the church, which I automatically, in my mind, that meant leadership positions. And so it was so that as well started to change once I thought that there are possibly other ideal forms of spirituality besides maybe being in the public image.
Nice. Well, you have a nice segue for some. Laura, I know you're going to have your own list, and I know you want to talk about getting called on spontaneously to speak and all that stuff, but I want to do first. One of the things you suggested along the way is of when you look at historical figures, how it's really nice to have a balance often, and the most successful movements and things are led by people with both personality types. You mentioned in one of your things like Rosa Parks, introvert, Martin Luther King Jr., extrovert, and it had a few others. Do you want to reflect on that real quick, and then I'll let you go into your list?
With Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King, I kind of think like neither one of them could have fulfilled the other person's role as and made it as big of an impact as they did. Like an old, quiet woman saying she's not going to move on the bus might have been different than a different personality, you know? So I just feel like extroverts and introverts working together for a common goal can be a really cool thing.
Nice. All right, Laura, take us through some Mormon experiences where your introversion was at play.
Yeah, I was just thinking about, a lot of people have mentioned that there's an extrovert ideal in like the United States or Western culture. And I think the difference for me in the church is that sometimes we attach spiritual judgments to the presence or absence of extroversion in somebody's personality. A couple of years ago, I turned down a calling for the first time. It was primary chorister. And I got pretty negative feedback and confused feedback because the reasoning I gave was that I said it wasn't a very good fit for my personality. And, you know, the leadership didn't really understand because I don't appear that shy when you first meet me. And I could go into more detail about their negative feedback. But the interesting thing to me was when I opened up to other people about what I had done, they started sharing stories of how they had callings that weren't good fits for their personality as well. One of my best friends was serving as a Relief Society president, but she actually said when she was called as the primary chorister, she's an introvert and kind of a mellow personality, but when she was called as a primary chorister, she said that she would cry for an hour before church every Sunday. And I just kind of thought, man, that's horrible. And other people shared their stories, but I just wondered how many people out there really struggle in their callings or feel unhappy and people don't know it because of differences in personalities. And I think it just needs to become okay to say no to people when they ask you to do a certain calling. And they need to, I feel like a lot of leaders will tell stories about how accepting certain callings is equatable with our, you know, devotion to the Savior. And that just kind of feels like shaming to me. It felt that way to me, maybe because I just turned down a calling. But I've actually decided to be more proactive, and I've gotten some positive results with that, with just asking for callings that I thought were good fits for my personality. Like in my ward now, I said, do you need a primary pianist? And they said, actually, we do. So that worked out well for me. I just think we need to stop attaching spiritual judgments to having certain characteristics, if that makes sense.
I think I have a comment around that situation from a leader's perspective that I've observed that contributes to some of this negativity as well. You know, we have this the culture that we don't turn down callings many times leads people to accept callings that isn't a match for them personality-wise. They're not very good at it. They don't do it very well, which then diminishes them in a leader's eyes. You know, so when another calling comes up that might be one that's a little more visible in the ward, that leader in their head is naturally thinking, well, you know, we gave him this other calling, it didn't do very well, so I don't want to put that person in front of the young men or the young women, or, you know, some of these callings that many of us just would love to do, be a part of or be in that position, but because of this idea that it doesn't fit my personality, or I accept that calling, but then I don't do it very well. It just perpetuates this image and means that introverts tend to be overlooked in many situations for leadership callings.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I actually told them, you know, I'll take any other calling in the primary, or I'll do any youth calling. But just being primary chorister, the idea of that was really hard for me for some reason. So, but I do agree that it's a perpetual thing. If you turn down one calling, then they feel like they can't put you in anything else.
Terrific. What else, Laura? I know that you've talked about the lovely experience of people spontaneously being called upon to bear their testimony.
Oh, yeah. A few Sundays ago, a member of the bishopric called a bunch of people from the audience to bear their testimonies. And that happens often. It always terrified me that I was going to be called on. But there was this one young woman that was called on, and she said, you know, I don't enjoy bearing my testimony, but it doesn't mean that I don't have one. And I felt like, wow, good for her that she said that. But on my mission, I had one funny story kind of related to that. In Uruguay, it's common to have a whole family get up and bear their testimonies if one person does. And sometimes it's with organizations in the church. Like if one valiant gets up, then the whole class has to get up and bear their testimony. And I remember one Sunday that happened. A member of the class got up, so the whole class and the teacher got up. And the teacher was, there was one kid that wouldn't get out of his seat to go bear his testimony. And she was kind of snapping her finger at him, like, get up here, Jorge, you know. But my companion, who was kind of a funny person, just kind of whispered to him, don't do it, Jorge, exercise your agency. And he turned around and grinned and held his ground. But I just think that's kind of a funny tradition we have, and a difficult one for introverts to be called on randomly from a crowd.
Yeah. And John Shaw, you had an experience with your daughter when she graduated from primary and going into Beehives. Do you want to quickly jump in with that?
Well, yeah, it was my oldest, and she was, she turned 12. And so she was advancing from primary into young women's. And as you know, the tradition in our ward was to recite an article of faith. And she'd been watching for years and years as people had recited an article of faith. And she dutifully got up there and had a prepared article of faith that she'd memorized that she was going to share. And in the middle of, as the bishop was introducing her and to the congregation, he said, well, I changed my mind. I'm going to have her bear her testimony. And it just mortified her, and minutes and minutes and minutes of silence as she sat there, and you know, tears are starting to well up in her eyes, and the bishop was totally uncomfortable, and I was ready to come unglued the whole thing. And it did impact how the young women leaders interacted with her for the next couple of years. They misunderstood what the issue was and had backed off purposely. They didn't ever come and talk to us. They just kind of assumed that she was somebody they didn't, you know, that was shy, that they did. So they didn't call on her to do things. They didn't ask her to do things, which she would have been fine as long as you give her a little time to prepare.
So John, what you've just articulated, and I guess is, again, it's not public speaking. None of you guys are having really a struggle with that. It's spontaneous or impromptu, and it's this, you know, you never know, and being put on the spot that's really more difficult for introverts, right?
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, any leaders out there or anybody who can influence a leader, let's get rid of this stupid thing about calling on people to share their testimony. That's something.
You know, I mentioned.
Three cheers for that.
Sorry, Dan, this is John Shaw again. I'd mentioned that I've seen this happen with general authorities. I mean, I'm sitting on the stand with the stake presidency, and the stake presidency would get up to give their talk, and the general authority, right as they're getting up, takes their talk away from them, and just spontaneously a stake presidency member then has to stand up and give something, and I guess, you know, out of pure spite, they do it to everybody else in the stake as well.
Wow. Jeez.
But yeah, it happens
all
the time.
Well, that's true. Okay. Happens all the time. Laura, share some more experiences that perhaps I experienced differently, or someone would experience differently than perhaps an extroverted Mormon.
The only other one I had on my list was teaching by the Spirit, but I think we were kind of talking about that. I read in Quiet a story of this Harvard lawyer who was an introvert, and she would have short-term memory loss when she would get nervous, and have to speak in front of her colleagues without getting notice beforehand. And that's kind of my issue. When I get nervous, I forget. No amount of study is going to help me when I'm nervous. But what fixed her problem was telling her colleagues ahead of time what it exactly was and giving her time to prepare. So I just really feel like that we need to honor other ways of receiving revelation or the Spirit, that it's not just in the moment, but what about writing by the Spirit or preparing by the Spirit? Are all general conference talks inferior because they were written beforehand, or I don't know.
Nice.
I think that preparing by the Spirit, when we say that teach by the Spirit, we often mean extemporaneous public speaking, that we're good at that. We should be just a little bit more accommodating to different personalities in the church, and that a lot of people have really cool things about their personalities. There was one bishop I had that was totally introverted, completely shy, but he was so wonderful and warm to talk to behind a closed door. You know what I mean? So I just feel like there are a lot of talents that could be really awesome, especially in ecclesiastical settings, I think, that introverts have.
Was it you, Laura, or was it Kimberly, perhaps, in her in our pre-conversation? She talked about being a young women's leader, and she was an introverted leader, and then there were these really wild girls, loved everybody, high energy counselors and things like that. And so it seemed to her that, or maybe it was you again, so sorry about this, that those are the popular leaders. The girls just love them the most. And yet the noticing that when the girls had an actual problem, though, they came to, it was either you or to Kimberly.
Kimberly, but I thought that was a really...
Okay, yeah, but can you relate to that? I really think that kind of fits with your bishop story there.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think I do well one-on-one with people, and not just me. I find that about a lot of introverted people, that they are easy, that they're really good listeners and can pull stuff out of people.
In the bishops that I've observed and bishoprics that I've observed, where there's an introvert in that bishopric and the bishop is aware, it allows that bishop to minister to people more effectively. He can send somebody to do some counseling and to do some interacting with a family that might be going through some struggles. And he can recognize that, hey, I need to send my lovey-dovey, my counselor that can go in and just have some good conversations with these people. And, you know, where he wouldn't maybe have that same skill, or the other counselor wouldn't have that. I think I've noticed that, I've observed that stake presidency, stake bishoprics that work most effectively include at least one introvert in the presidency.
I love that observation. We're already starting to move a little bit into this third area, which is like, what can the church do, or how can we tweak some things? We've kind of been starting to work in the develop a greater awareness things. Now, Laura, when you talked about teaching by the Spirit and things like that, one of the things that you'd said sort of in our pre-conversation that I kind of put in this third section, and so maybe it's the same thing, but I think it might be different. You mentioned that we ought to just redefine what it means to be spiritual. There's different styles of being spiritual or something like that. Do you want to reflect on that again, maybe just move us more into this, what can the church do to have a greater awareness?
I think extroverts have a ton of spiritual qualities I totally admire. One reason I married my husband was because he's an extrovert and has qualities I lack. But I do think if the church reevaluated a little bit what spirituality looks like and broadened their approach, that they'd retain more people and keep more people interested. Spirituality, to me now, is more about my questions than my answers. I was in a ward where there was this really outgoing elders quorum president, and he would always give these really animated and pulpit-pounding performances when he gave talks. And it really spoke to a lot of people's hearts. But maybe as an introvert, I think I respond better to leaders that are more of an image of myself. I think a lot of people trust people who are like themselves, you know? But I'm kind of a gray person that I don't think I know everything. So I kind of look for leaders who are like that. There was this lawyer, high councilman in a ward I was in California, and he never cracked his smile. He was kind of a lot of people kind of thought he was kind of scary and dry, but I always got a pen and paper when he gave talks, even though he was reading and his delivery was different, because they were beautiful. They were like Neil A. Maxwell poetry, and his ideas really resonated with me. So I would like to not only see more introverted related callings, but more introverts in leadership. And I'm not talking about myself. I think I'd be happy being the primary pianist for the rest of my life.
Yeah, so different ways to be spiritual, and the flashy ones are not the only ones, and in some ways the non-flashy ones might even be, like we were just talking about with John Shaw, they might even be put to better use in certain situations. So I like that a lot. Greg, I want to turn to you. It's been a while since we've heard you talk, and let's just turn you loose a little bit on your observations about Eastern kind of approaches versus Western approaches, especially when it comes to an introvert trying to change themselves into an extrovert or something because of cultural expectations. Do you want to riff for a while?
Basically, I just think before any practical or like church policy is changed, it's important to understand the underlying philosophy behind what we're trying to do. And I think that's where Eastern philosophy can really contribute, because everyone's seen it's kind of cliche now, but the yin yang symbol with the white and the black fish sort of shape intertwined. And that basically represents balance, and that can be between light and dark, male and female. And I see that exact principle can be applied to introversion and extroversion. And right now, kind of what we're discussing is the church is, in its policy as well as in its culture, is maybe imbalanced between or toward the extrovert. And so I think this balance goes through many levels. The first level being in yourself. We each have introversion and extroversion in ourself, and then we have our own responsibility to balance that, as well as the balance with how we interact with the church. And then there's the church as a whole having the balance of introversion and extroversion. And so I kind of see that there's already some shifts going on. I mean, just the fact that we're having this podcast shows that it's coming into awareness. And so I think starting from a point of not saying that extroversion's bad or introversion's bad, but simply that with balance, there's not only the most efficiency as far as like how the procedure is carried out, but it's also the most in tune, and things can be carried out in a way that isn't favoring one over the other. And so other than that, like really broad sort of general impractical philosophy behind it, I don't have a lot to say as far as any specific things besides what Laura was talking about, and just having some more awareness about the importance and the value of introverts in the church.
I love it. I love it. John Hatch, anything that you'd love to see the church, you know, it can again just be greater awareness, but is there any specific policies or programs that you think could be tweaked for introverts?
Yeah, I think one of the, you know, we talked about callings a little bit, and I'd actually forgotten about this experience until we talked about it, but I was called to be a counselor in the elders' quorum, and I was hesitant to accept it, but I took it, you know, because that's what you're, you know, it is seen, as we've talked about it, it's seen as this sort of symbol of your worthiness or spirituality, and I took it, and I frankly didn't last long. You know, it was a lot of meetings, a lot of meeting with people that necessarily weren't active, that kind of thing, and it wasn't for me. And then, you know, later I was called as gospel doctrine teacher, and really thrived in that environment. I took it very seriously. I had spent a lot of time preparing my lessons. I really enjoyed it, and, you know, got, you know, a lot of compliments on my teaching. And so anyway, I think I think to get a, if Mormonism can get away from this notion that, you know, this calling comes from God. I mean, you know, maybe, but, you know, maybe more that we see individuals and we think, well, this person seems like they'd be a good fit for this. You know, maybe institute something in the calling process where we just ask, you know, let's be upfront, let's be frank. And again, you know, and asking people, are you a good fit for this? Not just necessarily your time and everything, but your personality, and recognizing that that different personalities exist. And part of that may even come, you know, with a little bit of training for leadership. You know, Mormonism rightly, I think, prides itself on its lay leadership, but I think there is room for a little bit of, you know, training in there to say, well, you know, there are these different personality types.
Awesome. Awesome. And, you know, that reminds me a little bit, you know, how we often talk about, well, sometimes the calling is for the ward, and sometimes the calling is for the individual to help them stretch and to grow. And we get all these wonderful testimonies where somebody says, I wasn't prepared, I wasn't able, but this calling was the best thing for me. In some ways, we're kind of saying, maybe we shouldn't be doing that. Like, I'm going to make this person or give this person a call in order for them to grow. I would guess that most of you feel that's not a good thing.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, certainly I'm sure there are instances when that happens, and that, you know, and then that's also on the introvert to be like, well, is this really something that I'm not going to be able to do, or is there room for growth? So sure, that can happen, but I don't think, you know, I think you need to be aware of, you know, and respectful of other people's, you know, life experiences and their personality.
Terrific. Terrific. John Shaw, where would you go with some recommended changes or anything for the church, or, you know, to help us use you better?
You know, I've been thinking about and that, and the thing that keeps coming to mind is home teaching and visiting teaching. How difficult many people find this process, and how easy it is for some people. And I think that if leaders were a little more aware of individuals, and could put people together or to, you know, sign them with families that they knew that they would click a little bit, we might have some really good ministry happening there.
Nice.
Individually that would really make an impact in people's lives. I did want to say one thing. I keep saying one of the things I've observed, some of these things that have happened in the church. And so a couple of things. I watched a stake presidency call a patriarch. You know, I was taking notes, right? It's their thing. I also had the opportunity when the Kansas City Temple was opened up, you know, the temple president asked them to submit some names for a temple presidency counselors and for temple sealers. And what I noticed when the names were put on the board and we looked at them and talked about them, these were people who really weren't the big outgoing, you know, extroverted. The people, the names that they considered for patriarchs and these temple presidency and temple sealer positions were tended to be what I would say were deeply spiritual people, maybe quiet, maybe reserved, you know, maybe described as introverted. Hmm. So, you know, I almost wonder if that sometimes it does work itself out in the right way. And some of those people are called in the right way.
Yeah.
But that's just my observation of that situation.
That's terrific.
But what I really, really would love to see is I would love to see Bishop Ricks particularly just getting to know more families in their stewardships. We, you know, they tend to get to know, and if they're socially extroverted, they get to know those people. But those of us out on the outskirts who, you know, we're wonderful people, but because the bishopric members and ward council members don't always interact with them very well, or regularly, I think they miss out on a lot of opportunities. I almost wonder if we need to find some way to mix it up a little bit in there. And I don't know how to do that, really. Mm. It's kind of a natural social separation. But if we can find a way for people who are extroverted to just to really recognize that some people just aren't like them and are just as spiritual and can provide just as great leadership as they can if given those opportunities. But I think it comes down to having people who know their congregations, know that people individually, we're coming up on tithing settlement, and this is the 10 minutes I refer to as the 10 minutes a year the bishop brings my family in and tells them how much he loves us, and he pretends to know all these things, really. And if we really had a different opportunity to spend more time with these people, I think that many other people, many other individuals could be called and could be providing leadership in our wards and stakes.
Dude, that's super insightful. Thank you. Laura, what would be some changes? I know you have some on missionary work.
Yeah, there are a few things I wanted to talk about with missions. I still think proselytizing is a valid way to do missionary work, but I think maybe we could take some notes from Pope Francis. He said something that I really like. He said, "We can inspire others through witness so that one grows together in communicating. But the worst thing of all is religious proselytism, which paralyzes. I am talking with you in order to persuade you. No, each person dialogues, starting with his or her own identity. The church grows by attraction, not proselytizing."
I love that.
So that just kind of sounded like an introvert dream to me, to have a two-way conversation with people where people aren't pressuring each other. That sounds amazing. But I had a few other ideas. I think doing more service on missions and less proselytizing is a good idea in general for the church. But I think that would be really helpful for introverts to have some downtime where they're not constantly having to feel like a salesperson. I also think missionaries could have specific missions to like strengthen wards and help less active families rather than proselytizing. I've wondered what the result would be if introverts were sent to more Asian missions or to countries that valued introversion more than Western cultures.
Mm.
I went to BYU Hawaii and I became friends with a lot of Asian students there before my mission. And I had all these dreams that I was going to go to Japan or something. And in retrospect, I wonder if it was because I was attracted to their personalities or something. Another idea I had was, I think social media and technology are amazing ways that the church could tap into introvert talents. I read a Deseret News article. I was reading the comments of an article about why people go home early from their missions or something. And there was a grandpa who said that he had an introvert grandson who went home early, and they reassigned him to an IT department. And in that situation, he really became a leader, and it was perfect for his personality. So I think that we just need to be, maybe the church needs to be more creative in the types of missions they put different personalities on, if that makes sense.
Or mission presidents can just do a better job in their intake interviews to really get a feel for the elder or sister that's in front of him and just kind of have that in their arsenal of how you might be most effective and have a great experience.
And I think the church is realizing that there are other modes of communication that are maybe more effective than proselytizing.
So yeah, well, and we did a episode here on Facebook missionaries and how that's really become very, very effective, and it's a wonderful fit for lots of missionaries.
Yeah, I love that episode.
Yeah, very cool. Okay, so besides missionary work, what else? Is there anything more in just general church callings?
Just one last thing I think I wanted to share. You know, some of the things I've talked about in this podcast, they've been different things about me that are hard to share. And I really do second guess myself, especially in a public speaking setting. But the last thing I wanted to share is that I think second guessing is actually one of the best qualities that introverts have, and a quality that I think could help the church succeed and progress forward. Because maybe instead of being super assertive in our ideas and unmoving in our opinions, I think being more humble and better listeners could actually help wards and stakes and the broader church draw closer together. And I think Mormons are kind enough and malleable enough to adjust to new information when they have it. And I hope that something that was mentioned today about personalities can help people do just that.
I'm sorry. I'm really distracted right now because my kids are trying to go to bed.
Well, we'll let you go. Thank you so much, Laura. You're the driving force behind this. It's been fantastic having you on.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
It was great. All right. Take care, pal. Well, one of the things that I was about to seg with Laura before she had to drop off is that, actually, Greg, it's your mom's suggestion. Your mom basically says that she's great at writing letters. And so one of the things that she does is she kind of self-calls herself to, like, look around the congregation and try to get a feel and to say, who needs a little letter? Who needs a little note from me? And I just thought that was a great little kind of thing, and perhaps we could expand that into callings of somebody in the Relief Study Presidency or in the Elders Quorum Presidency or something as kind of an outreach through the written word to somebody to help strengthen them.
From my perspective, I have kind of a hard time seeing ways that that the church can implement or involve introverts more in church, because I kind of see it as kind of a three-way thing between the church being the structure of the gospel that gets the gospel out there and puts the word out. And then there's also your personal relationship with God. And so I kind of see it as like the church is somewhat of an extroverted thing to, like, inherently. And so I think one of the main things that the church could do is to give more validation to your personal experience and your personal relationship with God, and maybe a little less reliance on the structure or on the leadership of the church even. Because for me personally, I always felt very close to God, very connected. I had a strong relationship with the scriptures. And then sometimes I would be talking to my bishop and I would feel kind of frowned upon or that I wasn't doing things right. And so there was definitely a separation there between my relationship with God and my relationship with church.
So good. I really appreciate that. You know, one other thing, I'm just kind of looking at my notes here since we lost Laura. One of the things I like was a comment that she made. She says, I usually feel the Spirit in quiet moments. Sometimes I have Catholic envy because sitting in a quiet, beautiful building every Sunday sounds really appealing. Nature, a book, a celestial room of the temple are spiritually renewing places for me, but sitting at church on Sunday isn't really where I feel re-energized, and I've just had to accept that and look for other ways to find that renewal on my own. But wouldn't it be wonderful if we really did just have far more structured experiences that were, far more ritualistic, which, but when I say by ritualistic, I don't mean like rote and repetitive, but I mean like it's a time when you set apart time for contemplation. You take yourself out of normal, I've used these terms on the podcast before, from chronos time, the chronological time as it marches at the steady beat, and you move into kairos time, which is the Greek word for the unexpected, the time that's out of time. And I think it would just be wonderful if the church could recognize the need for more structured moments of quiet. It seemed like when I was a younger person, we would let a 3 or 4 minutes of testimony meeting go silent, but now everyone's too nervous. You know what I mean? Things like that. And so just this ability to sit with ourselves, I don't think Mormonism is ever going to get to where we have a cloistered movement, as a legitimate path for the more mystical or the more introverted or contemplative types. Mormonism will probably never go that way, but just to recognize that within our church, just as there is within Catholicism and other churches that sort of honor a contemplative or a cloistered path, we're going to have those people in our congregations too. And if we can figure out a ways to affirm that as a wonderful, valid spirituality, I think we'd be in good shape.
Yeah. And that brings to mind one of your past interviews with Phil Mclemore. And he brought up the point that nobody knows what to do during the sacrament, that everyone's kind of doodling or reading something, and some people are sitting there in peace, but in general, we're kind of uncomfortable with silence in the church.
I think yeah. I think that comes from having to corral kids for 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mormonism is such a pragmatic, functional religion. It's just constantly doing. I mean, even its most sacred space, the temple, it's supposed to be, set apart for the, the pondering and stuff. But even that, and it certainly can be, but even that has this real, pragmatic function. You're supposed to go and you get your name and you go through and you do work for the dead. And I mean, I remember as a youth, the baptisms for the dead, where you're getting dunked 15 times in a row to get this name done. And you go to church because, we're going to hear some talks and then we're going to go to class and we're going to learn. And so it is kind of this rush of energy and activity, which certainly on so many levels makes it successful. But I do think, when you were talking, Dan, that really struck with me, that what if there was just those quiet moments of reflection? I think that could be really powerful.
Yeah, awesome.
I am, having keys to the church for the last 20 years, I've often taken that time and gone and sat, in the chapel, or, use that as kind of a sanctuary that we don't typically have in our church, our worship services. But I loved sometimes when I would just be able to sit there and ponder and think.
Nice.
Great moment.
That's neat that you do that. And John, I was actually going to jump on a little bit after you mentioned how the temple and the celestial room is supposed to serve that, and how completely we miss the bigger picture here when someone will whisper to a patron, "You're lingering a little too long in the celestial room." It's just like, come on, wake up. Let's put that one out there as end that practice. Let people stay there as long as they want to. And if you need to build larger celestial rooms to handle that, do it. So there's my little soapbox there. So.
Yeah. The first time I went through the temple, I went through with my grandparents, and they it was the Salt Lake Temple. It was the live thing. And my grandparents, they did that every Thursday. And I asked my grandpa, I'm like, I would love to just wander around here and see the rooms and ponder everything. And he said, oh, you can't do that. We're going to be in the celestial room for 10 minutes and then we need to go.
Yeah.
And that was that experience.
I had an interesting experience there when the Toronto Temple was dedicated. I was missionary out in Toronto when that happened. And we were living with the woman who was in charge of the open house. And so we got a ride there every day, and we were there quite earlier than everybody else. And so my companion and I, we'd go around, sneak in all the rooms, and we'd push some buttons and see what happens.
See what happens.
It was really kind of fun. I don't want to admit too much more than that.
Nice. Oh, in other words, you were a typical missionary, right?
Yeah, exactly.
19-year-old idiot. That's too much fun. Hey guys, I have loved this conversation. I'm just going to give anybody a chance to say one more thing, or just kind of any closing thoughts. But I think this has been really, really great, really informative, and I think our listeners are going to really respond well. Greg, can I just turn to you for anything that's left on your notepad or whatever it is that you brought, or if you want to reiterate something that you've already talked about?
Nothing major, other than just maybe small bit of advice if there are any introverts that are having our time or feeling maybe not included fully, and that is just to first focus on your relationship with God and have confidence in that. And when maybe you hear things from other people or even from doctrine or anything that say your relationship with God is secondary to your relationship with the church or what church leaders say, then I think that that's where some of the danger comes, because after all, if you can't trust yourself, then you're completely lost and you have nowhere to go, because you can't even trust yourself to trust the church, So I would just say to first and foremost, have a firm reliance on your personal relationship with God.
So good. Thank you for being on, my friend.
Yeah.
And Kimberly, thanks for telling us about Greg and encouraging him to be on, and thanks for all your pre-conversation too. So shout out to your mom, brother.
Awesome.
John Hatch, anything left on your things to talk about list or something you want to reiterate?
Yeah, no, I mean, not a lot. You know, it strikes me as we're talking about, oh, you know, I mean, pastoring and being a leader of people is so challenging. And I can understand that a bishop listening to this is probably feeling like overwhelmed, like, oh, man, I have so much going on. And
one more thing.
Nice to these introverts and understand how they are. So, you know, I don't know if it's as overwhelming, I guess, is what I'm trying to spit out as we may have made it sound. I really do think it's just a recognition of the kind of language we use and the way the broader American culture and also the Mormon culture privileges, you know, extroverts and that kind of thing. You know, one of my big things that I've sort of poked fun at over the years is, you know, before we started the show, I even went and looked this up and like the Ensign, like if you look, my son is very introverted and he loves video games. If you look up the language on video games and Mormonism, it is so negative, you know, and you shouldn't be doing this or that, or don't waste your time on that. And then I type the word football in and it's just like all praise and we love team sports and isn't this great and everything. And I know that's a little bit random, but I think even just those little things, like recognizing the kind of language we use and the kind of things we appeal to, that there is this culture within Mormonism that, you know, that really privileges group activities and a certain way of being, and just even being aware of it, I think makes a huge difference.
Dude, thanks for being on. Loved having you. Thanks for being my friend all these years. And you really highlighted a lot of this over, you know, even though you said you only came to recognize this and to put these labels on yourself in the last year or two, you've been articulating that in our friendship for years. And I've grown a lot from that. And I've appreciated you.
Thank you. Much. I appreciate it.
John Shaw, take us home, brother. Anything
well,
left?
I just think that, you know, one thing to remember is that we've done some generalizing in many ways, and of course this isn't going to apply to everybody in every situation, and wanted to make sure we say that, and just to have charity in our hearts, those of us who are introverted, and we've recognized that in ourselves, realize that extroverts have the same misconception in their own minds. They don't really get that they're extroverts or that people are different than the way they are as well. So, you know, a call for charity and love for everybody, and everybody's just we're trying to do our best to fit all these checkboxes into our Mormon lives that we got to get through.
Thank you. That is fantastic. Really loved having you on, Guy. I just what a random thing where you brought it up right after we started this, and I'm just so glad that you did. Hey, listeners, thanks. I hope you'll all share your own experiences. What is your introversion led you to interact with the church in a certain way, or maybe to see things differently? How about you extroverts? Write about your experiences of, you know, having to come to appreciate this difference in temperament and orientation to the world, and the inflow of energy versus the outflow of energy, and all those kinds of things. I just hope that we'll have a really good, robust discussion on MormonMatters.org. So please do that. It's the end of the year, and I know that a lot of you are considering things for your year-end giving, and I just want to put in a plug that Mormon Matters would very much appreciate any tax-deductible donation that you would like to make. This is a pivotal time kind of for my ability to keep going, at least to be putting out pretty much close to weekly podcasts, and so other projects are going to have to just jump in if I can't make it here, and I'm not trying to put any kind of guilt trip on anything like that, but particularly stressful right now. So if you happen to be thinking of some year-end giving and want to donate or subscribe to Mormon Matters, please do. That would be wonderful, and I just love, appreciate hearing from you. I love all the different ways that this podcast and we've become acquainted with each other through the interactions with you, sending emails and comments, and just kind of we're making ourselves known to each other, and it's a real blessing in my life, and I'm so grateful for it. So, guys, appreciate you for being on. And Laura, one last shout-out for you. Thank you so much for spearheading this and kind of being the impetus. And I wish you guys good night.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Dan. I've been a huge fan for many years. This is like a little hero worship.
Oh, man. Well... We loved having you on. You are fantastic guest on this. So thanks, John, for that compliment and embarrassment. Anyway, guys, thanks again. Oh, and I forgot to mention again, thank you, Christine Haglund. We're sorry that you couldn't join us for the call, but we appreciated your working with us in the pre-conversation. And one more shout out to Kimberly also, who helped us with our email exchanges. So anyway, good night, everybody. Let's cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.
Enjoy.